And this is the Vortex of Submission on NVC Academy. And tonight's class is called Guilt and Its Antidote, Beneficial Regret. And welcome to call. This is Jim Manske. And how are you, Jory?
Well, I'm doing really well. And I think I'll move into the self-connection exercise. No, we just take some time to just settle into ourselves, our own experience in this moment. And I invite you just to have a sense of your body and your sense of being in an environment, perhaps feeling the air around you, where you are experiencing a sense of flow and being in contact, your body being in contact with the air. Body being in contact with your seat or with wherever gravity is pulling on your body. Getting a sense of how all that feels to be right where you are. Then turning your attention inwardly to your inner world. Just notice if there's anything that wants some attention. Just allowing yourself to explore any parts that are calling right now. Maybe it's a physical sensation or emotion you become aware of. Or a thought. Allowing yourself to be with whatever that might be. Just noticing, being the observer of your experience, perhaps opening to the curiosity, what's going on inside of you? Paying attention to what might be wanted. And then consider, what would you like to share with our community here today? What might want to be expressed? If anything. In a moment, I'll begin. Roberta,
on the exercise, I would enjoy even a few minutes to just talk about the urge to reward. I got the urge to punish, but the urge to reward, I could use a hint or two of how that works into all this. Thanks.
Thank you for putting out for what you want. Jim, would you be willing to respond to the question at hand?
I'm happy to answer the question because I think it kind of leads right into the lesson as well. So I appreciate the question from Roberta about the urge that I heard there was clarity about the urge to punish and some questioning about the urge to reward. So Roberta, what is it about for you, Roberta?
I'm clear about where rebellion fits in with punishment and the disembodiment and the separation and all of that. Where I'm not sure is with the reward. Is it because I'm setting an expectation and I'm rewarding someone because they're meeting something, that I'm then setting up a controlling situation that becomes a part of this? I'm not sure where it fits in.
Yeah.
In the same way that punishment does.
I think that's a great question and kind of a great insight that when we rely on rewards, it does set up an expectation. One kind of example that most of us are probably aware and have experience with is something like a paycheck, where there is an expectation that if I do a certain quantity of work or put my time in a certain way, that I will be rewarded for that. By getting the paycheck at the end, and then if suddenly, for whatever reason, the power that doles out the paycheck doesn't give me the paycheck, well, then that expectation isn't met, then that's pretty clear that could lead to some violence on my part. Yeah. The other thing that's a little disconnecting about rewards is that rather than being motivated by the intrinsic joy of meeting the need, rather we are incentivized in a way to do a task for the reward. So one of the ways that I've been thinking about it is this whole controversy around music downloads and stuff, and how from the point of view of the music industry, which is a reward-based industry, for the best artists get millions and millions of dollars, best in terms of how much money they can make for the record company, while other artists who maybe have just as much quality in their art and maybe even bring more joy to it may not receive anywhere near the reward of it. And so that it kind of, for me, it perpetuates an inequality, for one thing. And the folks who are doing it for the money, there's a certain quality of disconnection from the joy. And now I'm writing, or I'm teaching NBC, or I'm going to whatever my job is, not because of the intrinsic joy of contributing in this way, but rather because I have an expectation of a reward at the end. So I'm curious if that answers your question and if you have anything coming up for you as you consider it.
Yes, thank you. It gives a lot of clarity to me, and I'm enjoying your specific examples. It makes it even more real. And as far as more coming up, I'll have to think on that one. But I know it plays out in my life. Yeah.
You betcha.
Yeah,
this urge to rewards, kind of the first time we ever played around with this concept of kind of paying attention to these urges. And it's been fun for me to watch it for the last week. Not only the urge to punish or to do something that I'm pretty sure is not going to meet anybody's needs, and this urge to kind of, say something like, good job. And sometimes I actually do it. I actually do the reward or I do the punishment, and it's not until afterwards that I kind of wake up to what it was. And so I really like the idea of fine-tuning my awareness of the feelings that are prelude to the actual activity. And so those feelings are what we're calling an urge in this case. And to just continually fine-tune my awareness to notice how subtle these patterns are. And it kind of dives us right into the lesson today, which has to do with guilt, shame, and depression, and the antidote for those two things. So So first, the first thing I want to point out is that we're all on this journey of kind of awakening to the presence of this particular pattern and other life-alienated patterns like the vortex in our lives. And that there was a time, maybe even just a few weeks ago for some of you, where you'd never heard of the vortex. You just had this kind of lack of awareness. And that's the way we come into every new learning that we have. We're just not aware. We're, in a way, we're unconsciously incompetent of pieces of information or patterns or skills or whatever. And then we take a class or read a book or whatever, and we suddenly become aware of something. And I wonder if this was true for you last week. Just press 2 if this was true for you, that after you listened to last week's lesson and we were practicing, did you experience some sense that you wished you hadn't have done that, that you should have known better or something like that? Lots of folks are kind of aware that once you become aware of a pattern like this, that there's a whole layer of, I wish I would have known better. Yeah, lots of hands up. And I think there might have actually been a hand with a question before those hands went up. Charlene, go ahead.
When you were saying good job, just a couple minutes ago, you were referring to yourself. You kind of lost me a little bit around the end of what you were saying.
Either myself or somebody else. Right now I'm visiting my dad, and also there's a baby in the house who's about 18 months old, and they'll do something that I like. And so I'll say, good job. That's a kind of a verbal form of reward. It was certainly used on me, so deep in me. That's what I meant. Is that clear, Charlene?
Are you saying, though, that when you do that, does it give you a sense, a good feeling? Are you happy? That's why I'm confused. Is that what you want to do? Is that what you're saying?
I would much rather train myself rather than using a verbal reward like a little doggy treat, you know, good job kind of a thing.
Okay, now I understand.
I'd much rather train myself to express a heartfelt gratitude. Yeah.
Thank you. I appreciate you taking the question.
You're welcome.
Yes, the difference between actually connecting to the meaning of the moment as opposed to, like what Jim said, a doggy treat.
Yeah.
It's to have a real connection with the other.
If you have a question or something coming up, go ahead and press 1, and we'll answer any questions that might be up so far. Kim?
I don't mean to belabor the reward point, but just an interesting comment that I've heard before early in child raising, reward versus punishment, so many different trains of thought, but instead of saying good job, you did a great job kind of thing, I heard one time that it's better to have them feel that about themselves. In other words, wow, you did so-and-so, that probably feels pretty good, huh? Or how does that feel? Get them to recognize that for themselves. I mean, I don't care if they pick a field goal or not. I don't care. But how does that feel for themselves?
Exactly.
Or how does that feel to make an A on that test? And,
yeah.
And I heard someone put it that way, and that's what I try to do, but it is so hard just not to, because I'm proud of them. You know,
exactly.
It's hard to say that. It's hard not to just pat them on the back, but try to get them to feel it themselves.
Do you mind if I comment on that, Jim?
Please go, Jory.
Yeah, it seems like there's two parts to that. When I hear what you're saying about how does it feel inside of them, that's a really important part for me, too, in that the person actually connects within themselves and relates to their own behavior in a way that supports their learning as to what really does work for them and what doesn't work for them. So that part is a really rich way of supporting people being inner guided. And then there's the other piece for me, which is to acknowledge how I feel about it and to totally own my own part. I like when you do that.
Mm-hmm.
They might have just picked up a pencil and it, you know, didn't have any feeling. How do you feel picking up a pencil? I don't know. I don't care. I picked up a pencil. It was just there. And to me, it's a great gift, and to be able to share that back and for them to feel what it feels like to experience that appreciation and become aware of how it contributed to me. I see both sides of that. And that richness is available when we are able to get past that attaboy or good boy, good job, you know, and that sort of throwaway when something's really meaningful.
Right, and I think that that does come through, you know, in our support for their achievements. And I guess that I was trying to make the distinction that I do want them to know that it doesn't matter to me if they're a straight-A student. I mean, as long as they're doing their best, and as long as they feel good about what it is they're doing, that kind of thing. I think that the being proud of what they do or enjoying what they do, the seeing them achieve, I think is maybe the best way to put it.
Thank you for saying that last piece, Kim, because it reminded me of another kind of way that rewards can be less than life-connected is. One of our kids, both of our kids went to schools that used grades, and grades are used as both rewards and punishments. You know, you get an A, it's a reward. You get a F or a D or whatever, it's considered a punishment and something to be ashamed of and so forth. Even though we tried to do our best to kind of counteract some of that programming and to keep tying their learning into the intrinsic value for them of learning, our kids, especially one of them, seemed to get a little bit addicted to getting A's. And then one day, it looked like she wasn't going to get an A, and I think she might have actually gotten a B. And it was crushing. It was really crushing for her to not live up to her own expectations, and it led to some deep self-criticism, how she should have done better and so forth. And so that's just another way. How rewards can be damaging because we get addicted to the reaction that our body has when we make the reward, which ties into this whole notion of how deep this programming is in us, that falling into the vortex is virtually inevitable because of the way we've been educated, that until relatively recently, all of us were unaware of how deep this conditioning is in us. You know, we probably never even thought about rewards and punishments in this way until maybe we started studying NVC or something like it. So it's deep in us, and it's likely to come up over and over and over again, whether it's the unexpressed expectations or the disappointed or the resentment or any of those kind of parts of the wheel that we've talked about so far. We're likely to visit those for the rest of our lives. I think there was an estimate by the theologian Walter Wink that this domination structure has been created in us over the last 8,000 years. So if it took 8,000 years to get it inside of us, it's probably going to take more than 9 or 10 weeks or whatever this class is to get out of it. So I say all this just to create some space around it for you. My wish is that nobody ever use the vortex as a way to beat yourself up or even beat somebody else up. You know, like, hey, honey, I think you're sacrificing here. I think you're submitting. I don't think you should do that. So to not use the vortex as a diagnostic, either on yourself or on another, be gentle with yourself and with others. And that the benefit of becoming consciously incompetent about this, to watch ourselves fall into the pattern and maybe even run it right all the way out to rebellion, is that each time we fall into the vortex, it's like an opportunity to wake up to the pattern, an opportunity to learn something about ourselves, an opportunity to grow, an opportunity to increase our choice the next time something like that happens. So by continually fine-tuning our awareness of the pattern, it makes it more likely that we'll wake up quicker and quicker. And to help us wake up, our body has kind of given us this ability to feel some awful feelings. I mean, if you enjoy feeling shame, you would be a one in probably 10 billion people. Or if you enjoy feeling depressed, or if you enjoy feeling resentful, if you enjoy, like, oh boy, I hope I get to be disappointed tomorrow. You know, these painful feelings are there because they're signals signals that we're not as connected to life as we could be. And so they're like a little alarm clock. So fine-tuning our awareness to these urges, these signals, these deeply painful feelings is a very important part of this process. Because, especially some of these things, guilt, shame, depression, anger, resentment, are just debilitating. They can really rob us of a lot of juice, a lot of life, keep us from living the life that we want to live, living in the world that we want to live in. And so today we're going to be focusing on a practice to wake up from the vortex and actually use it as a learning experience in order to increase the amount of choice that we have the next time we do it. Before we dive in to the actual practice, I want to see if there's anything that you have to add, Jory, first, and also if there's any questions about what I've said so far. Jory, if you'd just even just chime in with a nugget or two of anything that's up for you right now.
I think what's up for me is how really important it's been for me in terms of dealing with guilt and shame to allow myself to really feel the feelings of sadness. Seems like there are so many feelings that I have, not so many, but there are certain feelings that I have that I see can be so destructive, and in particular the guilt and the shame and anger as well. And what an important part of allowing myself to feel the sadness underneath all of those, and to really let myself touch how deeply something matters to me. I have those feelings because something is really sweet and important. And that has been what has helped me do a lot of shifting around falling into the self-flagellation of guilt and shame or the throwing someone out of my heart. I'm complete. I enjoyed what you had to share, Jim.
Yeah. We'll just take this opportunity to just sink into your present experience. Notice how you feel, having heard what you've said so far. Notice, measure for yourself what's going on in your body right now. The needs are being met for you. Favor those. Maybe some unmet needs. You're hungry for practice or hungry for connection with some of the other members of the group. Those needs aren't met for you. Savor those needs well. Just to review, last week we talked about the rebellion part of the vortex. And what we meant by that is sometimes we take an action out of our anger or resentment that might take the form of extreme. It might be violence. It might be throwing a bullet at somebody or throwing a grenade or throwing a missile, or it might be throwing a punch or throwing an insult at the interpersonal level, or it might be some kind of addictive behavior that you use to punish yourself, self-flagellate, beat yourself up. Some form of rebellion or violence. And we've all done it. I'm remembering when, before NBC, we were raising our kids, and definitely did some things I regret there with them, and both in terms of rewards and in terms of punishment. But the one that I'm connecting to right now that isn't with one of my kids, but it was with an animal that we had. And we had a dog named Tracy. And for some reason, she never learned a single lesson about bladder control. And so I tried all the kind of nonviolent dog raising techniques that I learned, and none of them seemed to work. And so I decided to try some more violent dog raising tactics that I certainly saw happen in my family. And one day, Tracy, bless her heart, tiddled on the carpet for the 737th time. Believe me, I kept track. And I'm pretty sure I took her head and I kind of forced her nose down into the carpet. I was probably screaming at the top of my lungs no, 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 as I rubbed her nose in the urine-stained carpet. So that was the act of violence and rebellion, that if I was going to be doing this exercise, which I will be with you, I would write that down as my observation. See if you can find something from your past, and don't pick the worst thing that you ever did, but pick something that you could probably stay present for the exercise. Something that you did that you could classify as a mistake that you made that might have that flavor of rebellion to it. Then write down what happened. In my case, I would write down, I rubbed the dog's nose into the wet carpet while yelling at it. Just for practice, to help get clear on this distinction in MVC between an observation and an observation fixed with evaluation, go back and look at what you wrote and see if you can edit out any evaluative language, any judgment. For example, if I had written down, for the millionth time, like an idiot, I rubbed the dog's nose in the carpet, I might want to edit the millionth time and like an idiot. That all that was left was pure observation. Take a minute or so to do that.
It's not just for practice, but rather also to be able to see clearly what your action is. It's a really, it's just a cleansing way or a capacity to step back and really be with what has happened, as opposed to intermingling those opinions that keep us hooked in there. I also find that helpful.
Thank you. All right, so the next step in the process is to kind of enter into your memory of that event as richly as you're comfortable doing, to actually move back into the felt sense of what it was like in your body at that moment, then bringing that experience into the present. What's your body feel like right now as you recall doing that? Allowing yourself to have the felt sense, the physical sensations, the emotions. Totality of your emotional experience. Give yourself permission. Have your emotional experience in relationship to that event. Feelings that you're having right now as you recall that are important information for you. They're pointing something even deeper in you. So as you did it, you did whatever you did, what need were you trying to meet? For example, when I was rubbing the dog's nose into the carpet. I was trying to contribute to the dog's well-being. I was trying to get it to learn something. Trying to contribute to my own well-being. Beauty of my carpet, protecting the house. Those are some of the needs that I'm connected to. So press 1 when you have explored for a little while and come up with some needs for you. What needs were you trying to meet when you did whatever it is that you wrote about? Press 1 when you're complete. As you're writing and considering this, open yourself to be able to explore these needs, to feel whatever you feel in relationship to those needs. You might notice feelings of mourning, sadness. Give yourself permission. Feel sad, disappointment, frustration, whatever flavor of mourning there is for you. Just let yourself feel it. Sometimes it's helpful for people to put their pen down or their computer keyboard off to the side and just to allow themselves to enter into the physical sensations and emotions of the morning. Just let yourself feel sad. Open yourself, your heart to yourself, that sometimes you do things that you wish you hadn't done. Savor those needs. Okay. So, we've explored the need you were trying to meet. We've probably begun to touch on any unmet needs as well as you started to get into the morning. But what else was important to you? Like I noticed for myself, I didn't meet my own need for kindness, my own need for respect. Something, I'm pretty sure my kids were present when I did this, so I feel really sad that I probably taught a lesson that I wasn't intending to teach. I really want to teach my kids to be kind to animals, especially family members. I want to treat all beings with respect. So explore for yourself all your unmet needs in relationship to this. of your indicating that you're moving towards completion. And here's another little piece that you can add to it while we wait for everyone to kind of catch up to the same place, is to savor in the way that we did in the exercise last week, to breathe in the uncomfortable feeling, the sadness, mourning, disappointment. Breathe that in, to connect it in our heart to this need for respect or whatever it is for you. Savor it there in your heart. Then as you exhale, breathe it out like a gift, to wish that all beings experience respect. All beings experience kindness. So we're all ready to move on to the next step. This part of the exercise we call the cradle of compassion. One form of the cradle of compassion, and this is how it works. That first need that you connected with, the need you were trying to meet, in my case it was trying to teach the dog how to throw its bladder or whatever. I somehow wanted to make a contribution to the dog. Take that need and you put it in one hand. Actually, put your hand out in front of you if that's helpful. Palm up, like you're holding the need in your hand. Kind of imagine that this need has some sort of substance to it, something that can actually be held, it has texture. Maybe it's a soft need or edgy need or spongy need, whatever it is for you that has texture and maybe warmth or coolness. Maybe there's some kind of visual component to the need. Maybe it's shiny or pastel or whatever it is for you. Maybe there's even a sound or a song that goes with it. Build a representation in one hand of that first need and savor it some more. Then in your other hand, do the same thing, the need that was unmet for you. Again, give it that same quality of realness. Give it a texture, color, sound. You end up with a need in the left hand, the need in the right hand, and you hold them both. Savor them both. Then slowly, at your own pace, imagine that you bring these two needs together. That hands move closer together. One holding one need, the other hand holding the other need. Till your two hands are together holding both needs. Then gradually, slowly, whatever speed is best for you, bring your hands together, kind of intermingling and swirling these two needs together, letting the energy of both needs intermingle, blend, mix. Then again, at whatever speed works for you, to bring both hands to your heart. Allow your heart to open to these needs as you integrate both into your heart. Then to wonder, what's something that you could do? Found yourself in a similar situation that might contribute to both needs. What's one thing that you could do that might contribute to both needs? Then just wait. Hold open the possibility that something you could do might contribute to both needs. If something, some ideas are coming up for you, write them down yourself. Or draw yourself a picture, or write some poetry, whatever would work for you. And see what might be a hand up here. Let me just check in. Charlene, do you have a question or something up for you?
I think I figured it out. I got confused. One hand was holding what we were wanting in the very beginning, and then the other hand was holding the needs that tried to meet. I got a little confused.
Let me see if I can say it clearly, just so that, and I regret if I wasn't as clear as I would have liked to have been for you. In the one hand, you're putting the need that you were trying to meet. In my case, it was like trying to contribute to the dog's learning by teaching it something, why I was doing what I was doing. And on the other hand, the need that was unmet. So in this case, it was respect or kindness or something like that.
Okay, unmet. All right, thank you.
You're very welcome. Okay, I'm grateful for the question. I guess what I would like to do is to put folks into small groups so that you could have a practice of being with each other as you explore what you learned with this. Do two groups, one with Jory and one with Jim. Jory will have the group in the main classroom here.
Okay, so here we are. And we're in the main room with Doreen, Louise, River, and Teresa. And this is our opportunity to explore what you're experiencing in relationship to this practice so far. I'd love to get a sense of just your sense of resourcefulness right now and anything that you are gaining from this or anything that's still not clear for you. How about we start with Teresa? How is this practice for you? Is there something you've learned or where are you with it?
I think for me the biggest learning so far has just been to acknowledge or put some time into understanding the needs that I was trying to meet, and then I think more profoundly the needs that I was not able to meet, that I wasn't aware of even at the time. Then holding those together was interesting, although I don't think I totally followed the entire exercise at the very end there. Even just connecting with the texture and quality of each of those needs, that gave me some insight into, I guess, what actions might come out of the ways that I was feeling about those needs. Like the needs that I was trying to meet when I was holding them were prickly and electric almost, and then the ones that I was not meeting were much smoother and solid, warm kind of feeling to me in my other hand. And so that was all. I'm not even totally sure what to make of it.
Mm-hmm.
That was interesting.
Yeah, that is really interesting. I kind of meditate on them, and I've never had that sense of their different textures. I'm fascinated to hear your experience. Thank you. My mind automatically just kind of goes to bringing them together and see what they make. You know, what else is possible, or how do they coexist somehow in this circumstance? You might play around a little bit with that. It's just, how could both of those coexist in that situation? How could they both be honored? Thank you for sharing that. Is there more you want to say, Teresa?
No, that's it for me.
And River, how was that for you, and where are you now?
I enjoy this practice because it really allows for solutions or other choices to come that may not have. And because it's a multi-step savoring process, there's different levels of appreciation of the needs that I really enjoyed. And in a nutshell, I was on the phone with a friend and was really impatient. They kept repeating the same thing. And I said, if he keeps talking about this, I'm going to hang up. And my need was for connection. It wasn't really happening. And also, I wanted some acceptance. My need for acceptance wasn't being met. And when I brought them together, the new alternative to work with and perhaps allow both needs is a strategy that I use all the time for other things, is to laugh. The laughter could have, I mean, that the trigger could have brought up a discussion around what my needs would be and enjoying the situation. And because when I was in it, I didn't have much alternative. And I'm reminded how powerful laughter can be with the heart open.
Yeah, it's amazing. Even the thought that I don't have an alternative is really pointing, one, to the need for choice, but also is just sort of going down the dark path of shutting the mind down to possibility.
Mm-hmm.
And here you have found at least one thing that you could have done that would have supported both needs. Yeah, they could have had a greater sense. I think you said the need for respect was one of them.
Respect is in there. I didn't mention it, but yeah, it certainly was there. It was connection.
Connection.
The need for connection was there, and the need for acceptance were the two biggies, and those were in each hand.
And so there you were. If you had actually laughed, that would have tapped inside of you to that sense of acceptance of that moment.
Mm-hmm. Appreciating the uniqueness of the person's personality that I really do find endearing, but I like it in small doses. It seems like it's easier for me to take. But just to notice that I was triggered, but then to leave my heart open, and laughter could have brought awareness and connection to that moment. I mean, there were some other alternatives too, but when it came up, gosh, it's so simple. I mean, it really could have been a trigger that would have brought everybody's needs, would have begun the road to getting everybody's needs met.
Mm-hmm. Brought you a sense of connection, at least to yourself and your own joy,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
some acceptance around it. It may have actually even led to some curiosity or some sort of level of ease of flow with this other person.
And for me to make a clear request, rather than giving them a punishing slam, I could have pointed out what I needed and allowed them an opportunity to fulfill that request if possible.
So those are two more choices you could have had. You could have expressed clearly what your needs were. You could have made a request. And they're not mutually exclusive, but just to see how, as we play with it, even more ideas bubble up, more possibilities. So we're no longer, you're no longer at that place of choicelessness.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Is there more you want to say?
I'm good.
All right. Well, if there's more, we'll come back around. We'll go to Louise and then Doreen. So Louise.
Noticing is I'm most likely to rebel when I'm at the edge of my capacity, meaning I have a sense of a lot of pressure that decisions need to be made quickly. I'm in a sense of stress and pressure. And, you know, I can quickly flip into, I just want what I want. When I brought together my needs for power with. And in the other hand, you know, the need I didn't get met was connection and also power with. But bringing those together and thinking about what could I do now or do in a similar situation or in that particular situation that would contribute to power with and connection. Like River, I also came, the first thing that came to me was humor. Like, oh, just this pressure is so building up. What if I just go into humor with myself and the other person? Maybe even a reporting out loud of what the experience was like for me. Oh, gosh, I'm just reacting to the pressure here and, you know, whatever. But mm-hmm. I'm also looking even more deeply, which is like Jim was talking about, when you can feel certain sensations coming up in the body. So when I'm getting the sense of pressure, overwhelm, then again, I'm at the edge of my capacity. I forget to self-connect. I forget to empathize with the other person. I forget to pause. So those are the things I'm remembering is what would contribute to meeting both needs is any one of those, and any and all, pause, self-connect, empathize with the other person, humor, just kind of lighten it up. Everything can get mm-hmm. so heavy and so intense, and so that's what I'm learning through this process.
Thanks. I'm also really curious about what the needs were that were driving the pressure, because the pressure itself was mm-hmm. in the purpose of something that...
Yeah, clarity was, that was the first, the top layer, that was the stimulus, clarity.
So that's what was really driving you. You were trying to get to clarity and you felt an urgency around that.
Yeah, clarity and integrity of information, yeah.
Yeah. The reason why I ask is because it would be hard to take an action that didn't also address that. And so when you put the mix of clarity and information into this ease and power with and connection piece, does anything else come up for you?
Well, it's that, you know, looking in hindsight and looking over the shoulder. Well, this is more thinking out loud.
Sure.
You know, I've already done the sadness piece of how I really want power with and I really want clarity and integrity, and then I rebel, and that just does not serve those needs at all. I don't know. I think I lost my train of thought. If you could help me here.
Let me just step back a bit. What I get from the sense of bringing in some humor is that's an expression of kind of letting go of what we thought was important in the moment.
Mm.
And that's a really beautiful intervention, is to what I call, a phrase I use is, okay, tension is rising, drop the project.
Yeah.
And at the same time, sometimes I'm so attached to the project that it doesn't even dawn on me to drop that project, or something is so important, and it seems very important to persist. I mean, we could take this out to the outermost limits of, you know, there's some sort of need for protection, some sort of violence, and I don't want to give up on protecting that protective force there. But I do want to do something that can also maintain connection and that sense of power with and bring some ease. So what I heard from you was that that tension was coming up around the need for information. And maybe there's even a deeper need underneath. If you had information, what would be the deeper meaning of that in that moment?
Yeah, and not to put fine a pine on it, I wasn't looking for information. I was looking to convey clear information, and there was sort of a wrangling about what was the most clear piece and my concerns about what would happen. So hold on. So there's this discernment between when do we drop what we thought was important in that moment so we can sort of step back, regain some perspective and connection with the other, and then come back to the current project with a fresh perspective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I guess now hearing that you wanted to convey something important, and that was in the service of, this information was really about self-expression, but the self-expression was in the service of what?
It was contribution. It was keeping everybody in a certain project clear about certain financial numbers. So it was to serve everybody's clarity.
Is that the power with part for you?
Well, the power with part is I was in a disagreement with my husband, my partner, my project partner, as to a certain piece of data. And I was really clear about the integrity of the number and why it should be expressed a certain way. And if we expressed it the way he was talking about, it'd make things very confusing and hard to track and later down the line and so on. So again, there was this sense of persistence about clarity and everybody's clarity. But I think at the moment, if I just let go, paused, brought in some humor, you know, brought in some empathy, even though we were under time pressures, trusting that that actually does serve my concern about time and timelines and all of that. It's trusting that this will also meet my needs for integrity of timing and other people's needs and so on.
So as you look back, this is the point that I wanted to get clear on. You know, what else was factored in there that really needed to have attention? And so now that you come forward with there was a certain urgency around time, you also see this would serve that too.
Yep.
That was really what I was going for, because the emotions that you were bringing into it were in the service of something even before. I wanted to make sure that at least you explore whether the option you were choosing was going to serve the bigger picture as well.
Thanks. Yes, I understand what you're saying. Yeah.
Thanks for having that explore, and hopefully that was useful for people to see that distinction as well. Is there anything else you wanted to say, Elise?
No, that's complete for me. Thank you.
Great. We'll go to Doreen and see what you've learned and how your explore went.
I'm glad I had the opportunity to do this, because this was a situation I wanted to work on last week with resentment, and I didn't feel it, so it sort of came up again. And I realized the need I was trying to meet was one primarily of ease, and maybe secondarily that I could trust the people that I was working with, that they would do their job so that my life could have the ease that I was seeking. And what I was doing was acting in a way that didn't meet my need for kindness, but not directly to the person. This was almost like, it was almost like a surrogate person. The person that I was really frustrated with has actually left. I haven't worked with that person for a year, but we're still sort of feeling some after effects of projects that he never completed. So my resentment is for somebody who's no longer in my life, which is a little strange. So the recipient of that sense of resentment and the person to whom I feel like I haven't acted with the same kindness that I would want was actually a replacement, a rather innocent person. And I guess I've never really thought about how my actions towards this surrogate are really not about her at all, but about a need that I was trying to meet, sort of a long-standing need that I was trying to meet. So I don't know whether that's clear or not, but...
So let me see if I can reflect it. And in that moment, what was alive in you as you made the choice you made, what was alive in you was a deep need for trusting the integrity of your project, and that some sense that you could relax and trust that things would get done. Is that right?
Right, that we would all sort of work together as a team, pull our fair share of the load.
Mm-hmm. So what you were really wanting was cooperation and teamwork.
Exactly.
That's the need you were hoping to meet. The need that was not met by the choice that you made was kindness, your
exactly.
own integrity around how you treat people, and treating them as if they matter.
Mm-hmm.
And so as you bring together your desire for cooperation in the project, and you also connect to the purpose of why cooperation would even be important, do you connect to why the project itself is important in this moment?
Well, the strange thing is that the person is no longer there. I really, it's more of the symbol of ease than it is anything I can do about it. It's so past.
Let me see if I'm clear about that. Are you saying that you're noticing that you're actually reacting to something that has happened in the past and it's coming into present relationships with the people
exactly.
you're working with? Yeah, so you realize where that part of you that wants to protect you from being disappointed or having the project lose its viability, if you will, really comes from experiences you've had in the past with other people.
So, right.
And so it's almost like a need for safety, knowing that in the past things were not held the way you would like.
Correct.
So you're noticing that maybe that need became more at the fore as a result of that. And still, in this moment that you're exploring now with this, or in your present project, that need seems to be more alive. You're more aware of it. You're more protective of it.
Right, or I guess I'm realizing that my need for fairness is rooted in this deeper need for ease, trusting that everyone's going to work together as a team. And when that need didn't get met, sort of surrogate comes in, and so I'm not treating her fairly because of something that went on prior to her even getting there. But it struck me that my need for ease and trusting that everybody's going to pull their fair share of the load was so strong that I really couldn't even attend to the needs for innocent bystanders to be treated fairly or with the fairness that I would want.
Yeah, so that past experience showed you how important that need for cooperation and mutual integrity around the project and your need for support and all of that. So that's actually a very present need. That past experience did let you know how important it is.
Mm-hmm.
And the sensitivity to it is like a wound that hasn't healed yet. Mm-hmm. So you just barely touch it and it activates. And so that affects then your very presence to be able to respond in a way that is integrity with other needs. It's like everything else gets to be in the shadow because that's such a tender thing.
Yeah.
And what I suggest is that you actually still hold that need for that level of support and that sense of teamwork and cooperation with preciousness. It's just still as precious as it used to be, not to let it go. And to bring that need for integrity and everybody mattering, or kindness, you use the word kindness, bring that in there as well. And then let that roll around until you find a way to really honor both. That's really the practice. It's easy to dismiss something because you say it's not her and it didn't happen before, but it wouldn't even come up now if it didn't really matter. So to honor it, we don't want to dismiss anything. We want to just bring together and honor both. That's there. Anything come up for you as you hear that?
I'm just appreciating what you said about sort of the power of that emotion and holding it and attending to it. I guess because it's in my mind, sort of in the past, I'm tempted to say just let it go. It doesn't matter. It's past. But it's also sort of fascinating to see how the past has sort of seeped sort of insidiously into present.
More and more be able to attend to all your needs rather than dismissing any of them. You're not dismissing the kindness because you're making the other so big. Mm. And you're not dismissing the other to take care of the kindness.
Thank you.
Yeah. Powerful. Mm. It's really powerful and empowering and also healing. Really honor all parts. And that's what beneficial regret really is about for me, this process. It's about finding a way to honor it all. The needs met, the needs unmet. And to do that, we acknowledge that these needs are present. And I think we're going to have the rest of the group joining us any minute, but if any questions or comments about anything else that's come up for you, any other new insights, if there's anything else that you wanted to highlight about your experience or anything you've heard as we've gone through this. So we'll take a moment to just kind of self-connect and to give yourself permission to have done whatever you've done through this process and really savor needs that have been met and the needs even in this moment. And having had everybody else come into this group, I invite you, Jim, would you like to do a checkout round with everybody?
Thank you. I was talking away there. I just wanted to say first how much I enjoyed our small group and how blown away I am that we've run out of time almost, and how beneficial this exploration of beneficial regret has been for me. I just want to acknowledge Lynn Fine, who is a Dharma teacher in the tradition of Thich Nhat Hanh. She's the one where Jory and I first learned this phrase, I believe, beneficial regret, and I discovered her name again today on the internet as I was preparing for the class. So thank you, Lynn Fine, for this delicious description of this process. I love the term beneficial regret because it's a way of transforming guilt into something really juicy. We'll move to checkout now. Let's start with River for a change, and then we'll go to Teresa. River.
Gosh, I feel enriched. My need for learning is met, need for connection. I loved hearing the reports of the process with folks, and am happy that I reminded myself how useful humor can be. So the practice was really juicy, and the time feels well spent, and I wish we had another half an hour.
Thank you, River. We'll go to Teresa next, and then Kim.
It was definitely lots of learning about the different quality of needs and really the creativity, I guess, that's new to me. So thank you.
You're very welcome, Teresa. We'll go to Kim and then Annie. Kim?
Yes, I'm thinking of what the nugget. I've had so many nuggets to take away tonight. I think I'm still working on this, just pausing and waiting. I'm still just trying to concentrate on doing that. And I wrote down tonight your words, Jim, about how delicious it would be to have enough space to just pause. I think that the waiting and the just stopping and feeling, allowing myself to feel and to wait with that and to be with that before I react is still the most critical step for me. So that's what I'm going to continue to work on. And thank you.
Go to Annie next.
I'm still thinking about one of the things I heard you say, Jim, about the tools in our toolbox and the empathy and vulnerability. And I'm thinking also of transparency and authenticity being tools to use instead of punishment. That one's really got me thinking.
All right. Doreen and then Charlene.
I'm taking away the visualization of the cradle of compassion and holding needs that we're trying to meet in one hand and needs that are not being met in the other. The example I gave, there was sort of some temporal discrepancy, so it was a need I was trying to meet very much in the past, and working with Jory, just appreciating the value of not dismissing a need that wasn't met in the past, but rather still holding on to both of them at the same time, regardless really of when they happened, my nugget.
Thank you. Charlene and then Roberta.
I'm feeling very present and connected, I guess, to myself and life. And the silly thing, it was one of the very first things that I don't know who said it, but consciously incompetent came up in the beginning. And that felt really good because I'm studying a new massage technique. And I think that gives me... that lets me be somewhere, and I don't have to be perfect. So I'm going to take that away tonight.
Yay! Here's to conscious incompetence, one of my favorite places. Louise and then Jory?
Yeah, I'm really appreciating hearing things like how inevitable it is to fall into the vortex because how deep the conditioning is and about being gentle with ourselves and others rather than using this as a diagnostic experience. And you know, hearing about falling into the vortex is an opportunity to grow, to wake up faster. All the space and actively practicing here, the opportunity to actively practice permission and acceptance and spaciousness around all this. So that's one of the biggest things for me today. Usually I'm just like really jazzed. Practice has really uplifted me, inspired me, given me a lot of energy, and just kind of like right where I am right now in my life, it feels a little like in this moment sort of heavy slogging at times, like, oh, you know, I just have such a sense of where my capacities are and where I want them to be, and I know we've discussed that before. But again, just that opportunity to kind of turn towards that with acceptance and humor and appreciation for our shared intention, and also just a really deep appreciation around beneficial regret as a way to honor all of this and getting connected to all the needs. And I think one of the reasons I feel kind of sloggy is I've just been so in touch lately with a sense of it's taking such conscious competence to self-connect and really check in with myself. And I think that's actually an indicator that I'm doing it at a deeper level maybe than I did before. And that's maybe why it feels a little sloggy right now. Thank you for being here and receiving all that. And already my spirits are lifting again. Amazing how energy shifts so quickly. That's it for me.
Pleasure to slog with you, Dory. And I think we're done.
But for you, I'm loving the depth of authenticity and the willingness that I experience in all of you to explore, and just the richness of connection for me that happens as we get into touching the different parts of things. It's like this great adventure together, and it's such a wonderful opportunity for learning, so that when you share yourself with that depth, we're all learning little nuances of what it means to be human. And this reminds me of one of my favorite sayings that I think is at the core of us being able to learn together. Is there's a poet slave during Roman times. One of the things he said was, "Nothing human is foreign to me." And so what happens for you and you share with me, it just enlivens and enriches my map about what it means to be human, and that kind of exchange thrills me. So thank you for coming and playing and being yourself.
Thank you, Jory. And I feel like I already checked out when we started this, so I feel complete and joyful. Fare thee well. Until next week.
This recording is copyrighted by the NVC Academy and is for personal use only. To support our sustainability, redistribution of this recording is prohibited without written consent of the NVC Academy. Thank you.